49. Sometimes cowardice has its advantages, Sheeran told himself as he unbolted the door of the storeroom in the observatory basement where he had spent the time of darkness. He still felt shaky, but he had no doubt that he was still sane as he had ever been at any rate. It seemed quiet out there, and although the storeroom had no windows, enough light had managed to make its way through a grating high up along one of its walls so that he was fairly confident that morning had come, that the suns were in the sky again. Perhaps the madness had passed by this time. Perhaps it was safe for him to come out. He poked his nose out into the hallway. Cautiously, he looked around. The smell of smoke was the first thing he perceived, but it was a stale, musty, nasty, damp, acrid kind of smoke smell. The smell of a fire that had been extinguished. The observatory was not only a building made of stone, but it had a highly efficient sprinkler system, which must have gone into operation as soon as the mob began setting fires. The mob? Sheeran shuddered at the recollection. The rotund psychologist knew that he would never forget the moment when that mob had come bursting into the observatory. It would haunt him as long as he lived. Those twisted, distorted faces, those berserk eyes, those howling cries of rage. These were people who had lost their fragile grip on sanity even before the totality of the eclipse. The deepening darkness had been enough to push them over the edge. That and the skillful rabble-rousing of the Apostles of Flame, triumphant now in their moment of fulfilled prophecy. So the mob had come, by the thousands, to root out the despised scientists in their lair. And there they were now, rushing in, waving torches, clubs, brooms, anything at all with which they could hit, smash, ruin. Paradoxically enough, it was the coming of the mob that had jolted Sheeran into being able to get a grip on himself. He had had a bad moment back there when he and Theramon first went downstairs to barricade the doors. He had felt all right, even strangely buoyant on the way down. But then the first reality of the darkness had hit him, like a whiff of poison gas, and he had folded up completely. Sitting huddled up there on the stairs, cold with panic, remembering his trip through the Tunnel of Misery, and realizing that this time the trip would last not only a few minutes, but for hour upon intolerable hour. Well, Theramon had pulled him out of that one, and Sheeran had recovered some of his self-control as they returned to the upper level of the observatory. But then came totality. And the stars. Though Sheeran had turned his head away when that ungodly blast of light first came bursting through the opening in the observatory roof, he had not been able completely to avoid the shattering sight of it, and for an instant he could feel his mind's grip giving way, could feel the delicate thread of sanity begin to sunder. But then had come the mob, and Sheeran knew that the issue wasn't simply one of preserving his sanity anymore, it was one of saving his life. If he wanted to survive this night, he had no choice but to hold himself together and find a place of safety. Gone was his naive plan to observe the darkness phenomena like the aloof, dispassionate scientist he pretended to be. Let someone else observe the darkness phenomena. He was going to hide. And so, somehow, he had made his way to the basement level, to that cheery little storeroom with its cheery little godlight casting a feeble but very comforting glow. And he bolted the door and waited it out. He had even slept a little. And now it was morning. Or perhaps afternoon, for all he knew. One thing was certain. The terrible night was over, and everything was calm, at least in the vicinity of the observatory. Sheeran tiptoed into the hall, paused, listened, started warily up the stairs. Silence everywhere. Puddles of dirty water from the sprinklers, the foul reek of old smoke. He halted on the stairway and thoughtfully removed a fire hatchet from a bracket on the wall. He doubted very much that he could ever bring himself to use a hatchet on another living thing, but it might be a useful thing to be carrying if conditions outside were as anarchic as he expected to find them. Up to the ground floor now, Sheeran pulled the basement door open, the same door that he had slammed behind him in his frenzied downward flight the evening before, and looked out. The sight that greeted him was horrifying. The great hall of the observatory was full of people, all scrambled together on the floor, sprawled every which way as though some colossal drunken orgy had been going on all night. But these people weren't drunk. Many of them lay twisted in ghastly, impossible angles that only a corpse could have adopted. Others lay flat, stacked like discarded carpets in heaps, two or three people high. They too seemed dead, or lost in the last unconsciousness of life. Still others were plainly alive, but sat whimpering and mewling like shattered things. Everything that once had been on display in the great hall, the scientific instruments, the portraits of the great early astronomers, the elaborate astronomical charts, had been pulled down and burned or simply pulled apart and trampled. Sheeran could see the charred and battered remains jutting up here and there amidst the crush of bodies. The main door was open. The warm and heartening glow of sunlight was visible beyond. Carefully, Sheeran picked his way through the chaos toward the exit.
"Dr. Sheeran?"
a voice said suddenly, unexpectedly. He whirled, brandishing his hatchet so fiercely that he came close to laughing at his own feigned belligerence.
"Who's there?"
"Me, Emot."
"Who?"
"Emot. You remember me, don't you?"
"Emot, yes." The gangling, gawky young graduate astronomy student from some backwoods province. Sheeran saw the boy now, half hidden in an alcove. His face was blackened with ashes and soot, and his clothing was torn, and he looked stunned and shaken, but he seemed otherwise to be all right. As he came forward, in fact, he moved in a far less comical way than usual. None of his jerky mannerisms, no wild swings of his arms or twitches of his head. Terror does strange things to people, Sheeran told himself. "Have you been hiding here all through the night?"
"I tried to get out of the building when the stars came, but I got jammed up in here. Have you seen Faro, Dr. Sheeran?"
"Your friend?"
"No, I haven't seen anyone. We were together for a while, but then with all the shoving and pushing, things got so wild."
Emot managed an odd smile.
"I thought they would burn the building down, but then the sprinklers came on."
He pointed at the townspeople who lay all around.
"Are they all dead, do you think?"
"Some of them are just insane. They saw the stars."
"I did, too, just for a moment," Emot said. "Just for a moment."
"What were they like?" Sheeran asked.
"You didn't see them, Doctor? Or is it that you just don't remember?"
"I was in the basement, nice and snug." Emot craned his long neck upward as though the stars were still blazing in the ceiling of the hallway.
"They were awesome," he whispered. "I know that doesn't tell you anything, but that's the only word I can use. I saw them for only 2 seconds, maybe three, and I could feel my mind spinning. I could feel the top of my head starting to lift off, so I looked away. Because I'm not very brave, Dr. Sheeran."
"No, neither am I.
But I'm glad I had those 2 or 3 seconds. The stars are very frightening, but they're also very beautiful. At least to an astronomer they are. They were nothing at all like those silly little pinpricks of light that Faro and I created in that stupid experiment of ours. We must be right in the middle of an immense cluster of them, you know. We have our 6 suns in a tight group close by us, some of them closer than others. I mean, and then farther back, 5 or 10 light-years back or more, there's this whole giant sphere of stars, which are suns, thousands of suns, a tremendous globe of suns completely enclosing us, but invisible to us normally because of the light of our own suns shining all the time. Just as Binet said. Binet's a wonderful astronomer, you know. He'll be greater than Dr. Athor someday. You didn't see the stars at all?"
"Just the merest quick glimpse," said Sheeran a little sadly. "Then I went and hid.
Look, boy, we've got to get ourselves out of this place. I'd like to try to find Faro first."
"If he's all right, he's outside. If he isn't, there's nothing you can do for him."
"But if he's underneath one of those heaps?"
"No," Sheeran said. "You can't go poking around these people. They're all still stunned. But if you provoke them, there's no telling what they'll do. The safest thing is to get out of here. I'm going to try to make it to the sanctuary. If you're smart, you'll come with me."
"But Faro..."
"Very well," Sheeran said with a sigh. "Let's go look for Faro, or Binet, or Athor, or Theramon, any of the others." But it was hopeless. For perhaps 10 minutes they picked through the heaps of dead and unconscious and semi-conscious people in the hallway, but none of them were university people. Their faces were appalling, horribly distorted by fear and madness. Some stirred when they were disturbed, and began to froth and mutter in a horrifying way. One snatched at Sheeran's hatchet, and Sheeran had to use the butt end to push him away. It was impossible to ascend the stairs to the upper levels of the building. The staircase was blocked by bodies, and there was broken plaster everywhere. Pools of muddy water had collected on the floor. The harsh, piercing smell of smoke was intolerable.
"You're right," Emot said finally. "We'd better go."
Sheeran led the way, stepping out into the sunlight. After the hours that had just passed, Golden Onos was the most welcome sight in the universe, though the psychologist found his eyes unaccustomed to so much bright light after the long hours of darkness. It hit him with almost tangible force. For a few moments after he emerged, he stood blinking, waiting for his eyes to readapt. After a time, he was able to see and gasped at what he saw.
"How awful," Emot murmured.
More bodies. Madmen wandering in circles, singing to themselves. Burned-out vehicles by the side of the road. The shrubbery and trees hacked up as though by blind, monstrous forces. And off in the distance, a ghastly pall of brown smoke rising above the spires of Sorrow City. Chaos. Chaos. Chaos.
"So this is what the end of the world looks like," Sheeran said quietly. "And here we are, you and I. Survivors."
He laughed bitterly.
"What a pair we are. I'm carrying 100 pounds too many around my middle, and you've got 100 pounds too few. But we're still here. I wonder if Theramon made it out of there alive. If anyone did, he would have. But I wouldn't have bet very much on you or me. The sanctuary's midway between Sorrow City and the observatory. We ought to be able to walk it in half an hour or so, if we don't get into any trouble. Here, take this."
He scooped up a thick gray billy club that was lying beside one of the fallen rioters and tossed it to Emot, who caught it clumsily and stared at it as though he had no idea what it might be.
"What will I do with it?" he asked finally.
Sheeran said, "Pretend that you'll use it to bash in the skull of anybody that bothers us. Just as I'm pretending that I'd use this hatchet if I needed to defend myself. And if necessary, I will. It's a new world out here, Emot. Come on, and keep your wits about you as we go."